We're going to jump in right there. That was the assistant fire chief, Brian Tyner, Chad Hartman, Steve Simpson, Dan Cook, Lindsay Gensel. You've heard Adam Carter covering. Lindsay has been covering also. Steve, let's just go over some of the headlines that came out of that. Just as you and John talked at about 11:55, moving from three unaccounted for, two. Then when the assistant chief was asked maybe some particulars about these two individuals, no surprise, was unwilling to be specific about that. Then when he was asked, do you know definitively if they're at the complex itself? We do not. Talked about the five individuals who initially were taken to the hospital, saying one is in critical condition. Lindsay has just arrived back from HCMC, and it seemed to her that things had slowed down a little bit. Talked about the work that was taking place with gas main and a boiler system, and said at this point, no one from the firefighting department has been injured. Anything else jump out from what the assistant fire chief had to say?
No, but we should probably point out for those just tuning in, as far as if you're concerned about any kids that were there, they have all been accounted for. So we know that whoever was injured or missing at this point, they are not children. So, you know, there is some good news there. But again, the two unaccounted for, and Chad, you mentioned it, we've been saying it all morning, just because you're unaccounted for doesn't mean, you know, you could turn up 2 hours from now, you drop your cell phone and nobody has a way to get a hold of you, whatever the case is. So we just have to wait and see about these two. But again, the fact that we went from three to two and the one person was found uninjured, that's good. So
I think that's a really important point, you know, and we have to point out there were some initial reports of one fatality. And as you and John said during the last 90 minutes of excellent coverage, that was walked back fairly quickly. Sadly, that isn't that out of the ordinary. When we have stories like this, there can be genuine initial reports that turn out to be erroneous.
Even from the fire department where this one came from.
Correct.
You know, because somebody heard, well, we have one, and then, well, maybe they got to the hospital, maybe they weren't. So, again, that's the way you'd like it to go. You want it to go that way. You want them to back up, you know, oh, that person has not died, right? I mean, yeah, that's good.
What is the best way, Steve? Why don't we just, for the folks who are just tuning in, because we're getting a lot of people who have the lunch hour, they finish work, maybe they've heard some details about it. Why don't you just reset where we're at in total over the last 90 minutes, what has taken place?
We got the call, the first call at about 10:30 or 10:40 or so from what came in as a building collapse at the Minnehaha Academy in the 3100 block of West River Parkway. It was very clear quickly that something catastrophic had happened here. And as soon as we started seeing images from Sky 4, there was a hole in this large kind of block long building almost that, as John Hines pointed out, this is kind of where he grew up.
Yes.
It's been tacked onto over the years. You know, it started out as kind of a big grand school building, and it's kind of been tacked onto. So it's become about a block long, but there's a hole in the middle of this building. And
there is a significant gap.
Oh, gosh.
In Minnehaha Academy. And I heard you say this with John about 20 minutes ago. If you're not familiar with Minnehaha Academy, you've seen this type of school either with your own eyes, other places you've lived, or on television. It's just one of those images of what a school that a lot of people envision what it looks like.
Yeah, it's the school that perhaps when you were on that Sunday drive, your parents would say, that's where your grandmother went to high school, or that's where I went to high school, or whatever. It's that type of school. So anyway, we knew that something had happened. The initial report, as we talked about, was that there was one person that was killed. That was walked back pretty quickly. So where we are right now, the fire appears to be out by and large. The only fire that we really saw was coming from the ground itself, and it was one area, just a small fire that firefighters are really hardly bothering to put water on, which suggested to us that that was the source, the fuel from that was in fact the gas, the gas that that caused this explosion to begin with. We've had reports, Chad, as you would expect with an explosion of this nature and of this size, folks from several blocks away felt the concussion, heard the explosion.
Well, let me jump in on that, because while you're on the air, I'm trying to consume multiple things just to pick up on that point. I thought that there were two very telling interviews in clicking around. There was one individual who suggested she's 10 blocks away and she felt something. But the part that stood out to me most, Steve, there was a captain's soccer practice, a captain's soccer practice that was taking place. And one of the players said at one point someone was running out of the school and was saying gas. Absolutely smelled the gas, was running. The kids really didn't have that much time to react to it and saw him, and that's when the explosion took place. So that'll be a key point. How many people within the complex itself, Steve, did smell gas, and how much time did they have to get out of the building itself?
Absolutely, no question about it. And in fact, Jason DeRush is now just reporting that a permit was pulled for gas work at Minnehaha Academy by Master Mechanical in Eagan this summer. So you could assume that they are the ones that were doing the work here on this building. But you're absolutely right, Chad. We had heard some reports of that as well, that perhaps they had been given kind of a heads up. Oh, there's something not right here.
Yep.
They always say you smell gas, you get out as quickly as you possibly can. I think we have Sloan Martin, who is on the scene and can join us now with more information. Sloan, what do you have?
You had heard some reports of that as well, that perhaps they've been given kind of a heads up. Oh, there's something not right.
Sloan, can you hear us? Okay. Why don't we take Sloan off the tie line there? Because I think we're getting, you can hear the bit of the feedback, and just punch her up on. And Dan's going to communicate with Sloan a little bit. It's part of the technology we have. That's how you've heard Adam and Lindsay and have kind of that mic line quality. So we're going to try to get back to Sloan in a matter of moments. But, you know, when you see this particular significant gap, it just raises all sorts of questions. And we still have two, but we're feeling fortunate about the number of people who have been accounted for. Let's bring Sloan back in the conversation. Sloan Martin from our news team. Sloan, what can you share with us?
Hi, guys. I talked to a student here at Minnehaha Academy. She's going into the 10th grade. She and her family, her mother, her siblings all raced over here once they heard what happened. Her grandfather lives down the street here on 47th, and she told me that this is absolutely devastating to think that if this was perhaps a month later or 2 months later, there would have been tons of students inside. There are possibly hundreds in that building. So while, of course, they're extremely worried about victims right here, I think they're thankful that there weren't more people inside this building. I also talked to her grandfather, who lives just down the street from where an army of emergency cars are set up right now. He said that it was so jolting of a sound, his insides shook and clenched. It was unlike anything he had ever heard before. So people still kind of wandering around right now trying to get some answers and hopefully learn more about any of the victims.
Thank you, Sloan. I appreciate that. Steve, I just go back to the story that I heard, and we're going to bring Susie Jones in the conversation moments, of one individual shouting gas, saying get away. Kids, soccer practice, you're hearing this, you're trying to react, and as they're just starting to react, that's when the explosion took place. It's pretty stunning.
It is.
Susie Jones just left the press conference with the assistant fire chief, Brian Tyner. Susie, kind of give us the sense what you heard and what the overall takeaway is from the assistant chief.
Well, kind of recapping a lot of the information we've been hearing for the last hour or so, confirming that it was a gas leak and an explosion. One of the people that was taken to the hospital is in critical condition. But there's a real sense there's a lot of media here, Chad, as you would expect, and a lot of parents and concerned people that have loved ones or teachers at the school as they wait to find these last two people here, Chad. But he said they can't really go in. They have to really be careful because if they start moving things around, they could cause more damage. He talked about going brick by brick to see if, in fact, these two missing people are in the rubble or at home and just don't know that they're not accounted for.
So let me ask you this, Susie. Chad Hartman and Steve Simpson here, along with Susie Jones on the scene, continuing coverage of the building collapse in Minnehaha Academy just short of 90 minutes ago. They have been trying to direct family members away from the site itself, but you're still going to get individuals who are concerned about their loved ones who want to go to the site itself. There's a great deal of work that is taking place. There's a great deal of emergency responders. Who is outside the complex itself? Are there neighbors? Are there family members? What does that scene look like?
Well, I'm sitting here right now as I'm talking to you, and there's a group of four people. One gentleman just put his arm around another. He put his head down. I think there's a real fear that obviously this time of year, maybe it's not full of children, which is amazing and great that no kids were hurt. But who were the teachers in there? Was anyone, you know, that's who there, it looks to be a great concern for the faculty that may have been in the building at this time. So that's the feeling. There's probably a couple dozen people standing where the media briefing was on, I think I'm on 47th and 32nd. You know, it's kind of right by the river, but we're all in this grassy area just next to the, and I can see the building blow out through the tennis courts from where I stand right now.
That's one of the things, Susie, that we've been trying to get across to folks listening on the radio, having not seen the footage or the video of this or being there in person, and you can kind of describe it. I've been describing it as kind of a hole right in the middle of the building, blown out from front to back, basically. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah, and I can see through right now, and I see, honestly, Steve, it's a door. Like, it goes from, it looks like to be a door from one room into the next that's just sort of standing in the stark middle from the way I look.
Yeah.
Also, there looks like a bulletin board. So maybe that was a classroom or some kind of a room, because you can see inside one of the rooms from where I stand right now, which is kind of eerie, you know.
Let me circle back to a point you just made and Sloan Martin and ask both you guys this, because think about it. Ever since 10 years ago from yesterday, we've talked about the 35W bridge, and a bit of a discussion point has been, well, if that's a normal rush hour and construction is not taking place, mm-hmm. who knows how many vehicles are on that during the heart of rush hour? Now, some would say, well, guess what? With the gusset plate problem, that may have been exacerbated by all of the work that was taking place. The heavy tonnage was on the bridge. When we have this conversation about, God forbid, if school was taking place, the number of kids who were there, do we have to push back on that a little bit and say, well, if school is in session, would this work even be taking place?
Right. I mean, you can sit here and second guess and wonder and speculate, but at the end of the day, like you said, they wouldn't have been doing the work.
No.
So it's summer and they're getting it done before school starts. So a blessing that way. But obviously we have one person in the hospital in critical condition. We don't know who that is. Chief Tyner couldn't tell us if it was a faculty member or a worker, a construction worker, one of the people that were right on the scene of the doing the work with the gas line. But, you know, it's just, it's a kind of an eerie looking scene here with this gaping hole inside of this building. And I can look all the way through from where I stand near the tennis courts.
Last question for you before we let you go back to reporting. Do we have any sense that we're going to have anything formal from the mayor or even from the interim police chief at this point? Are they deferring at least right now to the press conference, which just took place, and they're not giving a sense yet when we might hear formally from either one of those individuals?
I would agree with that. I don't think we're going to hear from the mayor or the new chief about this, the police chief, because I think they are just putting all of their energy toward the fire department right now and first responders, as Lindsay Genzel is at the hospital. Everybody's on standby there. So right now it's still pretty active. You know, they want to get those two people accounted for. And whether or not, Chad, at the end of the day, that means they do have to go in piece by piece and look through the rubble, that could take some time.
Thank you, Susie. We'll hear from you later this afternoon. Lindsay, two questions for you. First, for the folks who didn't hear you reporting when you were at HCMC, tell me about that and how it was slowing down just a little bit.
It was slowing down. So when I arrived it was actually right at 11:30. There was a lot of media that had gathered because HCMC is a staging area for situations just like this. And so I was at the intersection of Park and 7th, which is where the ambulance entrance actually is. And at that time, there were a few ambulances that had arrived already. And they had this staging area set up. And if you have watched a medical drama or you work in a medical field, you've seen those green kind of tarps that they use to cordon off areas so that you don't see what is happening.
Right.
So they had those out. They had those ready to go. And right as I was talking with Steve Simpson, an ambulance did arrive. And the crew that was there, which was medical personnel from the hospital, police officers, there were some Hennepin County Sheriff's officers there, all went into work, and the ambulance backed into the small little bay there. They put up those dividers, those cloth dividers, so that we couldn't see what was happening. And after I got off with the phone with Steve, within minutes, a second ambulance arrived. And because it's staging area, you know, we can only assume with those five patients who've been taken to area hospitals that those two ambulances were associated with the Minnehaha explosion.
Well, and one of the things that we can report is that the HCMC Burn Center put out a tweet that said a mass casualty alert was put in place at HCMC, so only internal surgical procedures necessary getting ready. So this is a matter of course. When something like this happens, hospitals, probably not just HCMC, but I'm guessing others, go into, okay, this might be, until you know, you don't know. So you've got to be ready for whatever eventuality. Thankfully, they weren't flooded with a bunch of patients because thankfully there weren't many.
Well, Steve, I would think every big city in America has to have one hospital, a la HCMC, absolutely, where they are as prepared as you can be for the unforeseen. There are times when events are so overwhelming, but as Lindsay pointed out earlier, because of HCMC's history in other issues like this, they have a plan. They have worked on it for years, even when doctors and nurses and administrators have changed. And in a short amount of time, they were ready, because at the time this happens, you don't know how many people might be arriving at the hospital.
It's something they practice for. And again, as you said, because HCMC is so expansive, they've got a burn center, they've got a trauma unit,
yep,
they've got everything you would need to take care of whatever took place at a situation like this.
You mentioned earlier the soccer players that were just across the street practicing, yep, at the time of the explosion. We have the audio. Soccer player Jack Mahler was speaking to a cameraman from WCCO-TV, and this is the story you said. When you hear it, it's incredibly powerful.
We're out here having a captain's practice for soccer, just passing it around, you know, warming up. When, you want me to get into the story now?
Yep.
Yeah. When we heard a man yell, "Gas," and "Get out," and we saw him sprint down, one sprint down the street, and then one sprint into the building, kind of stand in the doorway yelling it. And then about the time the man sprinting down the street got to the end down here, there was a huge explosion. Smoke went up, knocked most of us kind of back, and it knocked me off my feet and kind of fell back. And then it was just kind of chaos from there. We were all shook on what just happened.
You guys help each other off the field? What did you do after you heard the explosion and saw all the smoke and stuff?
Oh, we made sure everyone was okay. Lots of the neighbors were starting to kind of run into the fire, and we didn't want to, you know, get in their way. So we all backed out, got our stuff, made sure everyone was okay, and then called the police.
Yeah, that is one of the sound bites to me when I had a chance to have one ear on the station and one ear clicking around. That is the soundbite to me that stands out the most. And as I said earlier, Steve, Lindsay, and Dan, it right now asks the question, where is that individual,
mm-hmm,
who was running out of the building? What was his particular responsibility? Was he involved in the actual project itself? Was he nearby in the school as someone who normally would be there? But it is chilling to hear that here's a young man, practice taking place, you know, on a beautiful, classic August day in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And just, you're hearing that. Wait a second, what did he just say? And then all of a sudden you kind of wrap your arms around what he's just saying, and the explosion happens at about that next moment.
And you are within feet of the explosion. We've heard from witnesses that were a block, two, three blocks away, who could feel the concussion. So imagine what that felt like. Just in your body. You know, you sit underneath fireworks. Occasionally you get those booms.
Right.
Think about how huge this concussion must have been. You know, our Al Shock points out something that we should mention here just because we haven't done it. This is the upper campus of Minnehaha Academy.
Correct.
Because there's a southern campus. So just to make sure that folks know which one we're talking about here, there are two. This is the upper campus that is affected. Southern is no problem.
Yeah. And before you jump in, Lindsay, just a reminder, it's Minnehaha Academy. Two people still unaccounted for. Five taken to the hospital. One was taken from the hospital pretty quickly, was deemed okay.
Yep.
And one in critical condition. We did hear from the assistant fire chief on those two unaccounted for, Lindsay. I think it's important to note that when the assistant fire chief, Brian Tyner, was asked, are they definitively here? We don't know that. Are they from the school? Are they from the crew that is working on this? We don't know this at that point. So that's where we're at now.
And the issue with that is because it's summer vacation. There's construction going on. There's summer events going on at the school. People come and go kind of at will, in all honesty, when you think of how schools run in summer break. Going off of what Steve said, I was amazed by some of the tweets that came out within minutes of the explosion when people were starting to find out what had happened. People who live in that kind of South Minneapolis neighborhood that stretches along Minnehaha and Highway 55, and you could just feel it. And people didn't know what it was until the sirens. And I want to point out, you know, yesterday we talked a lot about the 35W bridge collapse, and by no means comparing these in comparison, but the idea of these hospitals and all the training they've done for situations like this. And so to be outside HCMC and to see kind of the protocol that they have in place, you know, who is on call, who is in charge, who tells who to go where at what time is something that's so important for situations like this. And unfortunately, here in the Twin Cities, we've just had so many opportunities for training of these kinds.
Yeah, why don't we do this? Because I think we can even have an on-air show meeting on this. We've reached a point where at this point, news has slowed. What we'll do the rest of the way is anytime Adam, Al, Steve, Susie, Laura, anybody has more information, we will pass that along. If there are other briefings coming up, we'll do that. Why don't we pause here, and then Steve, why don't we at the bottom have a news update just recapping this? And then we'll go forward with the show. Anytime you want to chime in, you can. 81807. You want to call us. 651-989-9226. We'll pause here. We'll give you traffic and weather. We'll give you a news update. And we'll keep going forward while we keep an eye on this story all throughout the afternoon on WCCO.
Breaking news from WCCO.
Fire crews continue to be on the scene of an explosion and building collapse at Minnehaha Academy, the upper campus. This is in the 3100 block of West River Parkway. This happened about 10:30 this morning. A gas leak, the suspected source of this explosion. Now, despite initial reports that were more grim, here's what we can tell you at this hour. Two people remain unaccounted for. Five were taken to the hospital. One is in critical condition. Another one was treated and released. Now, we can also tell you that none of the missing or injured are children. Right now, the rescue crews are going through the process of looking for the two that are missing. Again, neither of them are children. And the fire department assistant chief is quick to point out that they're not even sure that these two are in the rubble. They don't know where they are. They are, by definition, unaccounted for. We had initial reports that three had been unaccounted for, but one of them was actually found and is safe. So that's what we're dealing with right now, just in terms of the numbers. Now, this all happened, again, just after 10:30 or so this morning in the Longfellow neighborhood in Minneapolis, in South Minneapolis. This man was a neighbor, actually, heard the explosion and went to the scene to try to help.
Minneapolis PD showed up and they helped, and we just kept digging, and you could smell the gas, and then the flames started, and it's like, we got to get this guy out of here. And fire showed up, but they were doing their thing, we did ours, and got the one guy out, but couldn't get the second one.
You think that they're still maybe trapped underneath there?
One of them said that there was a female that was right there by the wall, and I can only hope that it was fast, because if there's any comfort, that's the one that, because that, it was, he was crushed, but he wasn't conscious, but he was breathing, and if we got a heartbeat and we got oxygen flowing, we got a chance, and everybody worked together, we got him out, and ambulance load and go. Let's get them there. So
that's, again, from an eyewitness to give you an idea of what someone saw. Again, they were in the neighborhood. That's not his job. He went to help. That's what he saw. So, again, that's the reporting that we can do at this point. The two people are unaccounted for. Five are in the hospital. One of them in critical condition. Not clear on the other conditions of the four.
Can I just say this? That may be the person we're talking about. This story you've heard that you just convey, that very well might be the one person in critical condition.
So again, that's what we know at the moment. We'll continue to update you. As Chad said, throughout the day, we've got our reporters there, Adam Carter, Susie Jones, Sloan Martin. They're all on the scene, and we will bring you more information as we get it here. We hope to get another briefing from the folks on the scene, from the first responders that are on the scene soon, maybe within the next hour or so. We'll try to bring that to you as well. But for now, that is the latest from the explosion at Minnehaha Academy. And we will continue with more here on WCCO.
Susie Jones is checking back in with more information as we continue to follow the building collapse, Minnehaha Academy. Let's bring Susie into the conversation. What can you update us with, Susie?
Well, Chad, I just spoke with an administrator at a school, and she told me she was in the building, and we've heard this a lot. We've heard from Adam. But she said to me that they believe that the two people that are missing still are faculty. And I just saw a woman who's sort of been hiding behind this black vehicle that I'm standing next to, and Corey Schmidt from Minneapolis Police and another gentleman came to get her, and she looked to be quite distraught. So whether she was a family member or a friend that could somehow give them more information about, maybe they have found something at this point, but I think new information is that the two that are unaccounted for likely could be faculty, that's according to the administrator, and one woman looks like she went to supply more information. But it's pretty tense. You can really feel the sense that people are wondering who it was and when they're going to find them.
Yeah, this is a little bit different, but maybe not a surprise, Susie, from what we heard from the assistant fire chief, Brian Tyner, when he was asked on the record, formal press conference, can you tell us about the two people at the time publicly? He said, no, you never know what they know behind the scenes or what they feel like they can share at that point. So do you feel like this was a conversation they were sharing that they have known all along, the people that you talked to, and this was just separate from the official statement from the fire chief?
Yes, I do. I think that when I talked to the administrator, Sarah Jacobson, she was in the building with a group of administrators. She heard the bang. There were a group of them. She wouldn't tell me how many that left the building. I said, did you run? She said, no. And they wanted to make sure everybody was together. And so I guess that's how Tyner described how they're trying to determine who could be missing. I think you might have heard that.
Yep,
he said, we're talking to people who were around people to who was with you, kind of process of deduction, really, to figure out who the two people are. But anyway, it's just a lot. I think there are a lot of faculty right now standing around waiting for word on the identity of the two missing.
Thank you, Susie.
Stay in touch.
Absolutely. Yeah, sure. Thank you. Susie Jones with us. Jason DeRusha now is kind enough to join us. Jason was anchoring Channel 4's coverage along with Ali Lucia ever since the story broke. They went for approximately 2 hours. Glad to have you on. Wish it was under very dramatic, different circumstances. Give me just your overview of the story as we know it so far.
Well, what a tough, tough story, certainly, hearing, you know, you imagine being a parent and thinking about your kid at summer school or whatever the case may be. Minnehaha Academy just sharing an update on Facebook that all of their summer program students and staff are accounted for and safe. They're going to keep the afternoon programs going. Except for woodworking and driver's ed. I believe those two were scheduled to meet in the upper building, but most of the camps are in the lower building. You know, it's always tough in these stories where you hear the initial report is a gas leak, and you look at an explosion like that, and you think, well, what else could cause it, right? It's got to be some sort of a gas situation. But pretty quickly, and you carried it live, Assistant Fire Chief Tyner saying that contractors ruptured the line, and our investigators here at CCO have pulled the permit that they pulled. As much as people are going to want to blame on the one hand, it also sounds like these contractors are the ones who rushed in to tell people to get out. So you might have that kind of conflict where people on the one hand say, like, you know, you're doing a construction project and you rupture a gas line. And might want to hold them responsible, obviously so early in the investigation. But to have the fire chief say that contractors ruptured a gas line.
That was the confirmation, because I was watching
that's what
you
the chief said.
And Ali at the time, and I thought you made a very good point. When you smell gas, you don't know exactly why, what happened. We certainly can leap to think it's a ruptured gas line, but until you know it. But I was also surprised.
It's pretty early to have that. But you know what? If you're a construction crew and you rupture a line, you sure as hell know what you did. You know what happened.
And I'm gonna tell you this. The two of us get a chance here to talk with, I think it's Sarah Jacobson. Is that right? Lindsay Gensel. Sarah Jacobson is kind enough to join us. Sarah, thanks for your time. Can you tell us your responsibility with the school and what you saw today?
I'm the Executive Director of Institutional Advancement, so I oversee the external functions of the school. And I was away from my office. I was on the second floor where most of the impact happened. So what we know is that there was a gas leak that led to an explosion that took out a section of classrooms. on the second and third and part of the first floor of the school.
Can you tell us, and you jump in after this, Jason, sorry about that. Can you tell us if you know about the two individuals who are unaccounted for?
That's all the information I have right now, is that there are two individuals who are still unaccounted for.
Yeah, and we don't know how they know that there are two missing. We do know that at one point there were three unaccounted for, and the third was found not in the rubble, not in the building. So that's a
correct.
That's a hopeful sign, right? We hope that maybe these other two, you know what it's like, right, Sarah, in the summer? I mean, it's a little confusing to know which faculty member's in the building, who's there, who's not. I know I talked with some of the kitchen, with the kitchen team. Your kitchen is run by Tahir, who they do a lot of schools. And they had a handful of folks in the kitchen at the time, and they all got out, but they said the windows were blown out of the kitchen.
Yes.
Intense, very intense. What the fire chief said, it was all adults that were taken to the hospital. So there were no kids or no classes or anything in this area. Was this a STEM area? One parent told us that this part of the school housed like some new STEM classrooms or labs.
Yeah, so the STEM lab was affected as well as some classrooms. Any students that were here on campus were in the gym, which was not immediately affected by this. And so they were able to get out safely. They all accounted for each other, and they were able to get in touch with their parents right away.
Sarah, can you give us an idea of how many people were on site today when it's a unique situation? We're still weeks away from the start of school, but as you and Jason just talked about, you can have some administrators there, you can have teachers there, you have kids participating in activities. What is your sense about the total population, the number of people on the site?
My estimated guess would be between 35 and 50 people on site as far as staff members.
And how many people of staff were in that area where the explosion itself took place?
Oh, I don't know. Perhaps a dozen.
Do you know what the nature was of the gas line work that was going on around the boiler? I guess the boiler is also in that same area where the explosion took place.
I don't know the nature of that work, no.
But you do know there was work going on at the school over the summer, as is typical, I imagine, for a normal summer, right?
Yeah. You know,
there's a reason they do this kind of stuff when there's nobody in the school. Certainly this sort of danger is nothing that anybody imagines.
Sarah, was there anybody you talked to after the explosion took place who was saying they did definitively smell gas?
No, I have not spoken to anyone who has said that they have smelled gas.
I point that out because Jason was on air on Channel 4. We just played the audio about 20 minutes ago where there was a captain's soccer practice. And one of the young men participating said that one individual came out of the school running, saying there's been a gas leak, smelling gas, get away. The kids reacted. And by the time they could really wrap their arms around what took place, the explosion itself happen. So nobody in your area had that ability to react in any way beforehand?
No, there was no one near where I was who smelled gas, no.
Yeah, and which does lead you to believe, you know, if you have a gas leak that's like a slow leak that's building, odds are much better that's going to be smelled throughout the area. Whereas if this were a catastrophic rupturing of a line, that it would be so quick that it wouldn't be surprising that smell wouldn't spread. So that's kind of the thought from the assistant fire chief who said a crew ruptured it. Sarah, how are you doing? How are this is a tight-knit school, a Christian private school. How are you? How are the parents? How is everybody?
I think everybody is holding together quite well. We are a tight-knit school, and so we all support each other. And so we're all on the lawn together, supporting each other and praying for the people who we are still looking for, and just starting to think about the plans for how we move forward as a school after this.
Sarah, one last question for you. This is from the WCCO-TV Facebook page. I'm going to read right from it. This is from Linda Nelson, John Carlson's daughter. John is custodian at the school. He is 81 years old. We have not heard from him. If anyone has any information, You can contact me. I'll even give out the number here because she wants it out there. 906-474-6176. Linda continues, my mother has not heard from him or from anyone. We are frantic. Can you tell us anything about John Carlson?
I can't give you any information on that. We ourselves do not have any information on that, so I'm sorry.
Do you know if John was at the school today?
I don't know.
Okay. Sarah, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
Sarah Jacobson, Executive Director of Institutional Advancement at Minnehaha Academy. Jason, those are some of the moments that just really grab you when you have loved ones who are using the tools available to them, and social media obviously is one that is very commonplace, to put something out there and say, please, someone, tell us about fill in the blank, in this case, John Carlson, custodian at the school. We don't know if John is one of the individuals unaccounted for. We just know that this information was from the family and thought it would be appropriate to ask Sarah at this time.
Wow. It makes your heart jump, you know, as you think about that, as they're trying to find him and figure out what's going on. A lot of these students were kind of self-identifying their friends, and
right,
that's kind of the way that you're able to do it in the summer. I know, like, my kids go to a summer school program. You kind of have to sign them in on these iPads so school officials know who's in the school. But it gets a little different when you're a private school. It's mostly teachers and faculty in the building, and you're just trying to sort it out. I think, not that, you know, obviously so many parents and students and alums of Minnehaha have that connection with the school and worried about every single one of the people that was taken to the hospital, and certainly the two that are unaccounted for. And you just, you hope for the best. You hope for the best.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point you just made, because you think about a normal school day, how teachers, administrators definitively know if they're there or not, right? Yeah. If someone has to step up, or school. I mean, I still have one boy still and at Wayzata High School, and two other ones graduated fairly recently, and on the way up, it's no different there than where your boys go to school.
Sure.
It's a pretty quick system. If either one of your boys, or my three boys, are gone, they reach out to you, whether it's a phone call, whether it's email. So you're able to track people. That's why I was curious when I asked Sarah about, do you have any idea how many people were there? Do you know where they were? Just to come up with this number when they're still talking about two unaccounted for.
Right, right. You feel like, do we really know? Do we know what's going on? It's tricky. It's very tricky to try to sort it out. And, you know, everyone's doing the best they can with the initial reporting. Obviously, the fire department initially reported that someone was killed in this
yep.
collapse, and they walked it back. And obviously, we're really only, this started at 10:30. So we're only, what, 2.5 hours into what's going on.
Can I ask you one other question? But it's sure. obviously another huge story that took place, whether it was here, whether it was UNTV, all the outlets. Look back on 10 years after the tragedy of the bridge collapse. You were a part of a Reddit conversation yesterday, a lengthy one, because you were on the scene so quickly. And I've talked about that many times with us and in your coverage.
Yeah.
What stood out about some of the back and forth yesterday?
It was really interesting. I thought people, you know, Reddit has a reputation for sometimes being a little trolly, that the questions. I thought the questions were really smart and very interesting. We did a Reddit Ask Me Anything about what it was like to cover the bridge and kind of what has happened over the 10 years in between. I'll say one of the most interesting questions was about the fact that, you know, someone asked if my career had been helped by my work that night.
Yeah, right.
And I thought that was a really interesting question. In this business, other people's worst days are your best.
Mm-hmm.
And
correct. And it's been a springboard for many,
for sure,
many people.
You know, the bridge collapse coverage is probably what ultimately catapulted Ben Tracy, a St. Paul native who worked at CCO and did work for CBS Evening News that night, probably is what sealed the deal for him going off to CBS. And ultimately, Ben leaving is what created my job as the Good Question reporter. It's just this job. It's if you're a firefighter, your best day is, you know, trying to save someone in an awful moment. It's my reaction to the questioner was that it sucks.
Yeah.
It's terrible. You never wish for it. That's for sure. But you just hope when something terrible happens that, you know, someone like you or me or Adam or anybody, that you have the experience to try to guide people through it in a responsible way.
Well stated, sir. I know it's been a busy morning. Thank you so much for coming on. We'll talk to you again next week on Lighter Moments and excellent coverage this morning.
Sounds good. Thanks, Chad.